Gamkar.
And I'm Ricky Gamkar.
And I'm from Portland, Oregon, and work half-time as a parish pastor in a church that's half Lutheran and half Roman Catholic. And the other half-time, I'm in private practice as a clinical social worker.
And I'm Ricky Gamkar, and I teach high school at Portland Lutheran School. I'm a social studies teacher, old world history, geography. I'm a college counselor. I've got my master's in counseling, so I guess that's my credential.
These 2 weeks, I've been focusing first on what I think is a major issue, and that is, are we getting all that God is trying to give us? And so we talked about being alive to God, being alive to who we are as being created in the image of God, and being alive to the world that He is giving us. Secondly, this week, the overall topic would be called the first breakfast. And that is, as Jesus rose from the dead, He came back and He met the fishermen in the midst of their life when they were out fishing, and He served them breakfast, and He helped them to see and invited them to a whole new kind of life. And so I'm concerned with, are we really catching on to the newness of life that He is inviting us to? This then is a part of that series, and is a look at an issue that all of us deal with, and that is, how can we deal with conflicts and differences as we look at the challenges of marriage, for instance, the challenges of family life, even those that we are close to, we have conflicts, and then we look at the groups of people in the world and how difficult it is for us to figure out how to live together and not destroy each other. And so it's a major, major issue for us. To how can we deal with conflicts?
In the process of this, what we're going to do tonight, we are not planning to solve the Bosnian conflict, in case any of you are here with that in mind. But in terms of family and work and close relationships, we want to address that.
So first, what I'd like to have you do is just connect, and if you can kind of start on one end and pair off. So you connect, let's start on this end and move that way and connect with someone as a partner, and just someone you can talk to after I give you an exercise. So pair off from the end down so that we end up, okay? Okay, now what I'd like to have you do is think of a number. Any number you'd like to pick.
Together
or individually? No, just each in yourself. Mm-hmm. Just each in yourself. Think of a number. Just do that for a moment. And now I'd like to have you share that number with your partner. And just talk about it a bit. Share that number and talk about it. Now, did you notice that you had a difference?
Yes.
Okay. And did you have a conflict?
No.
Oh, how come?
Nobody cares.
What's the big deal?
It doesn't matter.
So what did you talk about?
The reason why they picked the number.
You tried to find out why they picked the number.
Yeah. No, I tried to figure out why you told us to do it.
You wanted to know why something was happening. Okay. And did you handle the situation gracefully?
Well, easy to listen to the other person's reasons because we didn't have anything.
Okay. Well, now that you've learned how to handle differences gracefully, we can run into class.
Let's go get some ice cream.
I don't know why.
Okay.
What
then? You said there was no conflict. Why? What are some reasons?
There's nothing at stake.
Nothing at stake. Okay. What could be at stake? What are some things that could be at stake?
Ego.
Well, in other situations, you know, just pride for one thing, but a number of them.
Or powers.
Yeah, or power.
Security.
Okay.
There wasn't anything to be right or wrong about. I mean, you were emotionally involved in a number.
So now if I had said, think of a number that's important.
There was no value.
Ours were.
There's no value.
To whom? To us or to you?
What's that?
A number to us that's important to us and to you.
If I had to ask you to think of a number that was important to you. Or that would, no, if I just say, call it a value, important. Then would there have been a conflict? Okay. Or what was the most important number that you could, what's the most important number if I had said that?
Yeah.
Okay, then we begin to get into some conflict. Okay, some judgments. Okay. So we begin to get into issues of right, who's right, who perceives reality in the right way. Some of you mentioned pride, ego,
power,
control. How does this affect me? What is it about? Okay. And what other kinds of things then get involved?
Irritation.
Okay. What else at stake?
Can I bring up one thing? My husband bought me a shirt. 10 is perfect, right? And he bought me a shirt. I didn't buy it for myself. And it says, you are a 9.5. If you were any more perfect, if I was any more perfect, I would scare myself.
No.
No.
That's so close, it scares
me. Oh. He got it for me. Hey, that's great.
No conflict there.
No conflict.
No
conflict there.
No conflict. Probably isn't true. Oh, you have to laugh. We've been laughing all through our 37 years of marriage. I know that's the most important thing that you can have is laughter.
Okay.
Just laugh everything off. You know, it's great.
So, one of the major factors is what we think is at stake. Our ego, our security. Our rightness, our possessions,
our values,
things that we think are at stake, change then how we relate to differences, and change the way we react to differences. I'd like to explore then what are some of the ways that we can react. And let's see, Roy, can you get up here?
Getting old,
but you can laugh your way up.
Excuse me.
Could you open the window back there? I think it's going to get a little warm.
That's one way to resolve conflict.
Okay, you stand over here.
Face you.
Yeah. Okay. Now. I want to go that way, and you want to go this way, okay? And so continue to want to do that, and see what happens. Oh, wait a minute. First I need to ask you. When someone pushes against you, what do you do?
Push back. Say, excuse me, you're fine. Are we reacting inside?
Yeah.
There's a reaction.
What are the circumstances?
Insecurity
Okay. But notice how quick the answer came to push back. So anyway, let's put your right hand up, and now you want to go this way, and I want to go that way. Okay? And just hold your hands right steady in the center. Keep the pressure right in the center.
Okay. Right in the center.
A hard dude. Keep it in
the center. Open the window some more.
Nobody's going in.
Okay.
Okay, what do you see happening?
Silliness.
Nobody's going in.
Okay.
getting any place.
No one's getting any place.
Adrenaline is flowing.
Working hard.
Yeah, the harder I push, what happens? Okay, so it escalates. What else did you notice?
Getting red in the face.
Red in the face?
A lot of energy was wasted there.
Okay.
You're gonna get any more.
Right. And I was beginning to get a little tired. And what happens when you begin to get a little tired?
Get irritated.
Get angry.
Get angry. And then what do you start doing?
Swearing.
You get mad?
Yep.
Push harder.
And you push harder, but you start looking for the other ways, the undercuts. You start
pulling them back.
Yeah, the devious ways. How can I trick this person? How can I get them? How can I hit below the belt? You know, how am I gonna get them now? So when we start getting tired, then we start looking at the destructive things and start trying to figure out how we can tear the other person down in some way.
I thought you were supposed to look to see who was biggest first.
I picked a strong one, I know. Now, that's called a fight response. When we are threatened, we have an adrenaline rush, and we move in to try to fight or overcome or control the situation. Now, one more thing that I want you to notice, that we didn't explore any alternatives. We became so focused on a win-lose solution that we just zeroed in on and stood there and kept that focus, a very narrow focus, actually. Okay, now.
Some people never learn.
He's got a good
okay,
experience.
Yeah, now, when I say three, come at me again. Okay, now what happened after I did that?
I was shocked.
Okay.
Other
thoughts. What do you think he felt?
Relief. Sorry.
Maybe.
Relief.
Stop.
Yeah.
Relief. Conquered.
A relief.
I got it. Oh, he was the winner.
He was the winner?
He overcame. And there was no more resistance.
Great.
I thought it would be simpler to shake hands.
W-E-R.
Just how much, you've got to look on
Power.
Power.
Power. In the glasses. Power, yes. May have felt powerful. How about alternatives? We didn't explore any alternatives, did we? Notice that we lost contact. We were out of touch. And what do you think went on in me?
There was probably a sense of a victory in your defeat.
May have been.
Mm-hmm. Or you could have been resentful. Embarrassment.
Okay.
Defeated.
But often we say resentful. You may have got me this time, but look out. So is the conflict over?
No.
Very likely not. That it builds and builds and builds. And we see this not only among people where one is overcome or uses the flight method. The flight method leaves it unresolved, and often those unresolved issues build over the years until a tremendous hostility develops.
Yeah. I'd like to ask why both of you felt that it was necessary to get past each other in the first place.
You told me to.
Wouldn't it be, if you arrived at a situation like that, couldn't you rethink it? I'm not talking about alternatives after the action happened, but beforehand. We both want to go in that direction. What about an immediate compromise?
Okay.
So you have avoided the conflict to begin with.
We could have.
Yeah.
And we want to take a look at that. Mm-hmm. But what we're faced with is that when we have two real strong wants, we often don't do that. We get invested in our wants, and we go through either a fight or a flight process most often. Now, someone mentioned that I may feel some victory, because some people use flight as a way of winning ultimately. It's the kind of person that uses a passivity, well, whatever you want, dear, whatever you say, dear, if that's what you want, okay. And they just kind of give in. Whenever there's an issue, they don't try to fight it. But ultimately, they begin to control with the passivity, because there is such a thing as passive power also. So flight is not totally a giving up, but it may be, I'll control you by giving you what you want, but then I'll get what I want in the end. In a kind of manipulative way, not in a straight way. Now, let's see, Roy, have a seat. What you're saying is that there's another way. And Jesus talks about another way. So let's... what's that?
1 Corinthians 13.
Well, there's that, but I want to go back to this kind of radical talk that we have in Matthew. Jesus said, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if someone wants to sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends the rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? And are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your brothers, what are you doing more than others? Do not even the pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect.
Matthew what?
That's Matthew 5, the 38th, starting with 38. What kind of reaction do we often have deep down in our gut?
I can't do that.
I can't do that. Maybe in your day, Jesus, but that doesn't seem to fit the world we live in. We live in a world that, in a society anyway, that emulates competition, that we are out to win, and it's a win-lose game. We are taught that from very young in our society. So we have a whole set of paradigms that says, you know, that's not realistic. That doesn't make any sense. And you're right. If you only see what seems apparent. I believe that the Sermon on the Mount is not understood if we do not see that the kingdom or the reign of God is at hand. That God is present and is active. And that God is here and now. And notice that he says, seek first the kingdom of God, and these other things are going to be added unto you. So he calls us to a radical way of life, but he also holds up a different reality. And it's only when we begin to understand that reality do we begin to find the ability then to move differently in life. That these things, I believe, are very practical ways of living life if we really understand what it's all about. What really is at stake? What really is important? So let's, Roy, would you stand up again?
Round three.
My turn to take a dive.
Okay, I just start wanting to come this way.
Could be a judo throw, I'm watching. Okay, well, I went about as far as I can.
And then what?
so long until you're out or what? Well, now he's coming with me.
Yeah, he's going to give me an extra mile.
Now you want to shake him.
Now, what did you experience?
Confusion to a degree. Because you said go that way and you keep going that way. Well, I couldn't anymore. I didn't expect you to keep going my way.
Okay. Anything else you noticed?
Less effort.
What was the difference between when I did the flight thing?
Well, I didn't even continue when you did the flight thing.
No, okay. You could.
I could.
Yeah.
Didn't lose contact.
Didn't lose contact. We maintained contact. We were always dealing with the issue. Anything else you noticed?
Well, he's concerned that you may come back and get him when you had kind of let go. I mean, you stated that. I don't
could
know.
Be a
but I mean, there's happening. There's conflict when somebody finally lets it
trick.
Yeah. Is something going to trick me now?
He didn't know how to handle it.
Right. Okay.
It was a new conflict.
Yeah. So
there was a lack of trust. There was a lack of trust there in you as to what you were up to.
Okay. Yeah.
He didn't fall down.
I didn't fall down. Okay, good point.
He wanted to get to that side, side of the room, and he did.
I was balanced and I was centered. Okay. And after you got some of what you wanted, what happened?
What? I don't know. There was nothing else to go for. You know,
okay.
Got over there.
He got to go on that side, but you both came back to this side. Mm-hmm. And he never objected to that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, thank you. You want to have a good one? Hey, there's probably not going to be enough. So share them if you would, family wise. Several of you, if you started there. Notice the idea of going the second mile. First, to understand that a little in the context, and it's kind of fun to hear the context. In Jesus' day, it was a policy of the Roman government that if a soldier wanted you to carry his pack and his things, that you were required to carry them 1 mile. And so his allusion to that is, if you are asked to carry them 1 mile, carry them 2. Notice some of the things that happened. What that's about is, I believe, first, I regarded him as an important person. And it starts there, I believe. The deepest need is to really respect one another, to have a basic appreciation. Because often, as you got at very quickly, the thing that's most at stake often in conflict is our ego and our pride. That is a very critical issue. And it's so easy to get caught up in the ego trip. I noticed a passage in Matthew. Jesus, where is this one? Or maybe it was me. Jesus is just talking about his disciples that come back and were concerned about the powers that they have. And he said, I've given you authority to trample on snakes and scorpions and to overcome all the power of the enemy. Nothing will harm you. However, do not rejoice that the spirits submit to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven. In other words, look out for the power trip, because if you start taking pride and rejoicing in the power trip, then you will become stuck in it. Always rejoice that your names are written in heaven, that you are who you are by the grace of God, and to know that deep down no longer makes someone who can ridicule you or call you names or etc. a threat to you. because finally they cannot take away your own self-worth. And that's one of the reasons I think Jesus went through the kind of ridicule he did in the cross, was to set us free from that fear that who we are can be destroyed by what others say and what others do to us. So if we're free from that fear, and then begin to move with a sense of fear. So when you have a conflict, breathe, sense your own worth and presence, and look and affirm the other. Here is a child of God who thinks differently, who's just as scared as I am in life, and is acting out of their fear in some way. So how am I going to relate to them? The second thing is, how do I build some trust with them? So I build trust with them as I begin to listen to what it is they want, try to understand them, and begin to try to move with them. What is it you're needing? What is you're afraid of losing? So doing those things that begin to build trust. Because when we begin to build trust, then a person begins to relax. And when they begin to relax, then we begin to have the possibility of looking for some win-win solutions. And so if you can move with a person, get them to begin to relax, then you can say, well, what is it you want? Why is that important to you? How is that important to you? I want to understand what you're wanting, what your needs are. And then maybe they will begin to respond and say, well, to you, why is you're so important to you? And hopefully then some dialogue can evolve. But even if it doesn't, you by responding in that, how is this so important to you? I want to understand you. Is a way of moving with a person and beginning to help them think through themselves. How important is it? Is it something I have to have? And as they begin to feel understood, they will begin to relax. And finally then, to move with them in some way, to share and look for the solutions where you can move with each other finally and hopefully come out with some win-win solutions.
Looking at this question, what are you afraid of losing? It seems to me that that could be taken in a very antagonistic way.
Okay, I'm using that for you to ask yourself.
Not to confront the other person,
what are you afraid of losing? But a question like, how is this so important to you? Is a way of saying, I want to understand your investment in this. For some reason, you have a tremendous investment. And that might start them talking. You know, or it could be said differently, it's strong feelings about this. Could you help me understand that? It's different ways of trying to move to the other person and give them a chance to begin to say what they want to say. Now notice what happens if we don't do that. On the other, the fight. Well, why do you want to do that? Well, that's a dumb idea. And see, we begin immediately to want to share our ideas. We're afraid if we just listen to the other person and let them talk, that we're giving in. We aren't. We're letting them talk. We're showing interest. And often, if we do, they will begin to relax and maybe listen to a bit of where we're coming from. And to be willing to share where we're coming from, ultimately, is to build a bridge of understanding. Now, I don't have a watch, so can you tell me the time?
7:25.
Dale, can I ask a question?
Sure.
You know, when you describe, often I'm not so rational in a conflict. You know, all those things you describe, you know, I wish I were that way, but often I'm not. Somehow I'm more explosive at that moment. And so some of that good reasoning that you just described, it seems to escape me. How can you help me with that?
Well, because you decide right away how you're going to see a conflict, and you may have then a sense, a paradigm, that conflicts are a threat. And if you could, or a challenge. If you can really begin to see that conflicts are an opportunity to understand more fully another person. When I made the comment, I was not joking at the beginning. If you learn how to share conflict and use them, you can deepen your relationship in marriage. If you say, boy, she really feels strong about that, and so do I, what's that about? Oh, this is a chance to really try to understand what's going on here. And you can learn to understand each other more fully and share yourself. So part of it is maybe a trigger word. Whoops, this feels like a real zinger coming on here. Could this be an opportunity? Can I see it as an opportunity? And maybe that can help change, shift the focus.
I think, Bill, though, from my own personal experience, a lot of that is going to make an opportunity. It depends also on the other person's ability to make an opportunity also, that the quality of how a conflict resolves, regardless of how one person's skills may be at a high level, and if another person is looking at it as win and lose, it doesn't come out to the same sort of result as two people are looking at it as an opportunity to understand each other at the same time, too. So I think there's a certain unreality to assume that just because I look at something as an opportunity or something and I feel centered about it, doesn't necessarily mean it may enhance my understanding, but it may not enhance the relationship.
And that's true.
Yeah.
So this is not a technique of manipulation.
Right.
That a person may, however, the chances are far better if I use this on myself. So if I change me, it may not end in hugging kisses the first time, or first 10 times, or 50 times, or 100 times around. But pretty soon the person gets the sense, this isn't as much fun as it used to be. We used to go. And see, a lot of times, our need to fight is out of, that's the way we saw it done. And fighting has a certain kind of satisfaction in it, even though it hurts. In counseling, for instance, I've had couples come in who just say, man, we argue all the time, we're just always fighting, help us stop fighting. And so we begin to learn some techniques, and they begin to discover that they can stop fighting. And they go home, and they have a whole week, and they don't fight. And then the day before they come in, they have a wallop of losing fight. And they say, you know, didn't we learn anything? And I said, well, you're used to getting certain kinds of attention, or certain kinds of stroking, as it might be called, through fighting. And when it got quiet, you began to feel like maybe you weren't really connecting. You got scared that you weren't really feeling each other. So you needed to have a fight to meet that old need. So often the fights and the bad feelings are so familiar to us that we need them. We need them to feel the way we felt as a kid. And so we often fight because we need to, not just because we don't know anything else.
I think growth in the individual is recognizing it and practice it. And once you start doing it and keep it up, the repetition and identifying your feelings on it and getting in contact with your feelings is where you can make real progress, you know, in a conflict, a situation such a conflict. But you got to start recognizing it, I think, first of all, and not just do your normal reaction of retaliating. I think if you can identify that feeling that there is a conflict, and then start being rational about it, and make solution out of it.
Okay, let's put some more flesh and blood on it.
Watch the knee.
I can't do my old karate kick.
Okay. We've got an issue, and let's deal with that issue. I want to go to California this year for vacation.
Always want to go to California for vacation. We've lived in Oregon for 26 years. There are lots of places I want to see in Oregon. And you never seem to listen to me when I say, I would like to go to Oregon. I'd like to go to Ashland. I'd like to go to the caves. I'd like to go down to the coast.
Well, we're usually doing what it is that you want to do.
We never do what I want to do. How many times have we been to California and how many times? I mean, hey, we live in Oregon, so we go around Oregon a little bit. But how many trips have we made to California? I mean, you always want to go there. I mean, what is there about this golden state? Most of the people there want to come here.
It's an exciting place to go, and I don't know what you've got against California.
I don't have anything against California, but it seems to me that you need that for kind of a high.
It's got a lot of stuff in it to do.
There's a lot to do in Oregon. I mean, you kind of devalue it.
so we're a little off the beaten track, but you seem to think that this is not, there's nothing worth seeing here.
You feel like an old stick in the mud.
Just because I would like, there are real treasures here. People come from Minnesota.
Not everybody is smart.
There's a good point. I mean, it's a dumb thing to do. Always wanting
I'll
to
bet more go to California than to Oregon.
I'm not sure that we ought to be training living our life by what everybody else does. That's a stupid way to do it.
That's an exciting place to go.
I understand you think it's exciting, but I think there are lots of things exciting around here.
Well, okay. Have it your way. If that's what you want.
But
we'll stay in Oregon.
How long do you think? Sounds like a fun trip.
Round two. I got an idea. Let's go to California this summer.
I want to go to Oregon. I mean, we have lived here a long time, and we've never been to. I'd love to go. I really think it'd be fun to go rafting on the Rogue River and go down to.
Rafting on the Rogue River? Oh no!
Oh come on! That sounds like fun.
The water's splashing all over you. That's gonna be fun.
Water soluble.
I don't want to go rafting. It ticks me when you just kind of all of a sudden cut my ideas off and you just won't consider any of my ideas.
What are the things you want to do in California?
Well, I thought, I wanted to go down and see some friends and
look up your list.
I have a conference we could go to. I'd like to go to conference.
What kind of conference do you want to go to?
Well, we've got this faith and life kind of conferences down in Berkeley, and I'd like to go to one of those.
Well, that's where the Jessups live. They live really close to that, don't they? Is that who you want to see? Who else do you want to see?
Well, that's some of our friends, yes.
We have kids that live there. We have made a lot of trips there. I mean, I've been to California a lot, but and we haven't done a lot of things in Oregon that I would like to do. I mean, you have never seen a play in Ashland. I mean, this is, down there at the Shakespeare Theater, people come from all over to go there, and you've never seen it.
Well, you're right. I've never seen a play in Ashland.
I really want to see one of those plays. They do them so well, and they're fun to do, and I'd like I'd like to share that with you.
Well, we could probably do that on the way.
See, it's hard having arguments with your own kids in the room. Okay, I'll tell you what. There are things that we haven't done. We're not straight down I-5. We could do a little wine tour around Roseburg and go see a play in Ashland.
Okay.
Okay. Schedule ahead of time so we can't say, we missed and now we're going to go to California, right? okay, then I'd be willing to go down.
I'll see what a conference is and how we can hook that together.
Yeah, okay, and if you can't find one, maybe we come back early.
Okay. Now, what did you notice between the two?
Well, the second one was compromise. You were compromising people.
They both had a miserable time.
Well, you were actually coming up with ideas that enhance one another's, whereby you could each do something and work it out together. Perhaps each of you, in a compromising way, might give up something else, but that you could pick up the most important things that each of you want.
Mm-hmm. We were considering.
I think you got into more detail about what each of you want.
Started listening. You were starting to consider each other's needs and wants.
Okay, and how did we start?
Furious.
Furious. Okay. The first time we didn't express that fury much. So one of the things I grew up with was if you weren't expressing anger, somehow that was reasonable. Was the first one very reasonable?
No.
Okay. It's possible to talk in nice, low, sounding reasonable terms and yet use a lot of blaming, bringing up the past, and all kinds of ways. It's possible to be very angry and very caring. And so one of the things I want to emphasize here is that anger is not bad. Anger can be expressed if you maintain contact and do not start hitting below the belt or judging or knocking each other. If you say, I'm really angry about this because I really want to do it, it's really important to me. You can say it very loud. In fact, you can say, I am! So, one thing is, anger is not necessarily a bad thing. Notice that even little babies get angry. It is a natural, very healthy emotion, and it can be used to express your feelings and to express yourself if you don't move to the next levels, and the next levels are resentment, which is hanging on to the past, hostility, which is the desire to tear down the other person, to undercut, to hit below the belt, to call them names, stupid, dumb, you know, all the names you can call, go after them.
Stick in the mud. I just had a statement on that. I think that a lot of times that people will use anger to cover a whole range of things. It's like you say anger is a very natural and normal thing. That's fine, but if that's your only expression, you're stunted.
Okay, that's right. That anger can be a rackety kind of thing, where one gets angry about anything and everything.
Well, and that's all the emotion that expresses anger, because that's the okay emotion, particularly, you know.
That's right.
You know, in the old days, that's the
also
only thing
that's
that
also being stuck.
To do,
however,
to be angry.
However, being hurt can be something like that. Being jealous can be something like that. Feeling guilty can be a rackety feeling. All of these feelings we can hang on to. To give you just a little context for that. When you're a little child, you need to have attention. And when you get attention, you have certain feelings. And you learn then certain ways of feeling when you're getting certain kinds of attention as a child. And you may learn to react with anger and have temper tantrums, that in your family that works. You may learn to be hurt, and that's one way to get attention. You may learn to feel guilty, that's another way of getting attention. So often our negative feelings are associated with how we got attention as a child. And one of the things we do then is often go on and find reasons to feel those old feelings and set up relationships so that we get a certain reaction from people and we can feel those old feelings. A fellow comes in for counseling and says, my wife picks on me all the time. Nag, 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 nag all the time. What do I say to him? How do you get your wife to nag you? Because I want him to begin to take responsibility that very likely he is playing a certain part in that. And he can feel nagged and he can feel like a victim because that's how he felt as a kid. And he can begin to learn that he has an important part in that transaction.
When I grew up, it was not acceptable to be angry. I was an only child, I was a girl. It was not acceptable to be angry. If I got mad and I went and slammed the door, my grandmother would be there right away and say, don't you do this. You mustn't do this. But it was okay to be hurt. And I could pout and I could be hurt. And pretty soon I would say, take it easy. That's what my grandmother would do too. And I began to react against that because I really did feel manipulated. I needed always to deal with her hurt. But on the other hand, I was being trained in how to feel hurt all the time.
Mm-hmm. I just want to finish these three because I want you to see what hatred. Hostility is the desire to tear someone down. Hatred becomes a stance. And it means locking ourselves in. I hate you. This is how I'm going to relate to you. Now, who does it hurt? It does hurt the other person also. But finally, the one that is most hurt is when we are tied up and hanging on to resentment and hostility and hatred. That is all biochemical response that builds and builds over the years and gives us often the diseases and the illnesses that we don't want because we've hung on to these. This is why forgiveness begets healing. We've got to let go of wanting to tear the other person down. So this is not only healthy, or it is not only a good way to deal with conflict, It is a way of letting each conflict be an entity into itself and then letting go of it and moving on. Now, we got...
Well, I was just going to comment on what she was saying. The way I understand what she said kind of is something that I was thinking too. Anger can cover up many other emotions, like hurt, jealousy, can come out as anger. And if we don't deal with the anger and recognize the other emotions, we can't get past the resentment and hostility and hatred.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And just to again use your words and so that we have an awareness, hurt can cover up the anger. Or that's guilt can cover up the anger.
Isn't anger a release of pain? I mean, when a person say emotionally hurt or even physically hurt, so you get punched the nose and you're about ready to bawl your eyes out because it hurts so bad, the first thing you do is get angry and hit the other guy back. You know, I mean, it's a way of releasing the pain without showing weakness.
Well, okay. The purpose of anger is to mobilize us. That when we get angry, our whole body becomes mobilized with adrenaline and sex, etc., and we are ready to do battle. And however, if we use it in its natural form, anger mobilizes us, and then as the situation diminishes, we let go of the anger and we're done with it. Now, if the boss has come down hard on you and you get angry, kind of deal with letting go of the anger, expressing it, and go home and relax and enjoy the evening. If you go home and try to hang on to the anger all evening, the anger then doesn't serve its purpose. It doesn't mobilize you. You go home and you churn and you tie up, and then you're just tying yourself up. So discover how to let anger move through you and use it for what it was meant to be used for and not hang on to it, because very soon then it gets to be resentment and these three.
Do you have techniques on how to let that anger move through you without it getting to those levels?
One is owning it. I am angry. Identifying what it's about. Just what is it that I'm so angry? What is it so threatening to me here? Why is it so important so we can get in touch? And maybe letting another person know that we're angry without needing to attack or destroy them. And then if we need somehow, if we find that we just stay tied up in knots, then often exercise or taking if you really have a kind of a reservoir, and some people just have a tremendous reservoir of anger and they need to find some release. And I often suggest like a tennis racket on a pillow or your bed or something. It makes a loud whack, but it doesn't hurt anything. And you can say, use it to explore your anger. Say, what's my anger like? What's that about? Okay, just go ahead and get angry and see what it's about. See what happens in you and discover if you can release it and then breathe.
Don't you find that sometimes with anger, though, you're really not confronting the person or situation that you're angry about? A lot of times people take it home. I mean, like you talked about, like you said, you had an argument with the boss or something like that.
Okay.
And so instead of talking to the boss and saying, I am angry, you don't do that. You take it somewhere else.
Okay, so going into the boss and exploding is probably not the wisest thing to do, right? Okay. You may want to, however, use your anger to at least go in and say, this is very important to me, and do it in the way that is acceptable within the office situation, and release some of it by dealing with the issue, not just running and hiding from it. And then you may need to release some of the anger on your way home.
Not on the freeway.
Well, you can release by shouting and other things. You don't need to beat up the other motorists. Okay. Yes.
One thing about some people, they always appear to quick anger, then they use that against you, saying you're defensive all the time. Then pretty soon you end up taking the class on how to be less defensive. You know, how do you get through that? It's like when they're talking about.
Okay. Well, first, own your own anger. If you believe that other people make you angry, you've given away your power. And you enter the situation powerless. You made me angry. It's like you have control over my whole emotion. Mm. When you do that, I get angry. Mm-hmm. I am choosing this, finally. And if I begin to own it, then I can explore what it's about for me and how to deal with it. And if you come on strong with anger, yes, other people may get defensive, so it may not be the best way to work with someone if you want to get something done, and to discover, again, how to sometimes share your anger. When you do that, I really get angry, rather than coming right at them with a blast. Maybe a way of, you know, giving some distance to the other person.
You know, there's a fine line, though, between you saying, you made me angry, or when you do this, I become angry. Now, I know there are things that I could do to you that cause you to become angry. I don't think that's because I own or control you or anything. An unjustified attack would make you angry. Attacking one of your children or your wife or someone near and dear to you would make you extremely angry, and justifiably so. That does not mean that I am controlling you in any way. I think it just shows that you're normal.
But he always has a choice. He always has a choice
no,
of how
he really
he reacts.
Doesn't.
Oh, yes, he does. He could look at you and say, God, what a crackpot, and walk away. You know, he could say, that's wrong, this guy's crazy, or he could get upset. I mean, there's lots of choices. You could react in lots of different ways. Mm-hmm. That may not be the normal person's reaction, but there is a choice.
To hold on to the basically you had a choice. And, you know, if someone, you know, if you came up and slugged me, I would be threatened enough so that I would feel anger. And yet I still have some choice about what I'm going to do with that and how I'm going to let myself experience that.
That is a perfect example. Okay. Our society kind of trains us, too, to react with anger.
I'm thinking of the person who, as you said before, is very, very passive and gets hurt with all of these outbursts, but still doesn't respond in any way, just keeps taking it within and building up. Eventually, that person is going to explode or have a nervous breakdown, because somewhere along the line...
Depending on how they take it in.
Yeah, you have to...
You're saying they take it in and hang on to it.
Yes.
That's it's I'm possible saying. To let someone do all kinds of things mm-hmm. and let it, you know, kind of dodge it. It's like someone shooting arrows at you, and you say, oh, okay.
But
where are we at? Okay, let me finish with this story. One of the things we need to do is really take a look at the way we assume life is, the basic paradigms. When I ask the question, and I do this repeatedly, what do you do when someone pushes against you? It is so automatic for many of us to say, push back. That's how we are trained and oriented. An interesting experiment was done down in California where they took a group of boys from California about 9 years old and a group of Mexican boys. And they took them into a room and they gave them a rope with a knot in the middle of it. And then they drew a line on the floor. And they said, okay, now every time you can get that knot to pass over that line, you get a dime.
Who are we talking about now? Which group?
The California boys.
Okay.
Line marks, get set, go. Okay. So they'd say, fine, you made it pass over about five times. Here are your dimes. They brought the Mexican boys in and gave them the same instruction. Line marks, get set, go. So in addition to our own family orientation, we're dealing with a whole cultural orientation that is basically a Windows orientation. And it takes a great deal for us to come to understand what it means that the kingdom of God is at hand, and that we can truly, if forced to go 1 mile, can go two, and discover the real excitement of that opportunity. Thank you.